WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the eating the leftover phase. I was very upset the other day. I told my wife, we didn't have enough green beans. We ran out of green beans. What are we going to do with all this turkey and stuffing and gravy and cranberries and all the good stuff? I'm going to add crab cakes to it. I had a little crab cake catastrophe here last week that I'll be telling our friends at Coco's about, because I went to Coco's the other day. I brought a crab cake home for the holiday. I'm going to have to fix it. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Wednesday at Coco's in Lauraville. In the afternoon, I'll be joined by Ron Cassie. Rasig is my co-host with a K. Co-host, get it? Coco's, he's my co-host. He lives in Lauraville. It'll also be brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free, 0% financing. And our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. There's one right in the neighborhood where you are. My little orange light went off a couple weeks ago. Haven't driven as much lately, so I don't need my oil change. But when I do, Jiffy Lube is there to take care of that and so much more. Take care of them. They are taking care of us and our great sponsors. We're out on the road this week. Coco's Wednesday. Thursday, BMA. We're going to be at Gertrude's. I've never had the Gertrude's crab cake. I've heard it's a big deal. Looking forward to that. And Dan Rogers will also be with us on Thursday. Then Friday, we head to Hollywood Casino in Perryville, where I wouldn't be cashing my tickets based on my picks the last 3 weeks. Although, I'm touchier on 500 if I could just get the Vikings to pull through on Monday night. Luke Jones joins us now after a late night on Sunday night out at SoFi Stadium in L.A. First things first, dude. We didn't do the trip because Chad Steele, and he likes himself on television from what I could tell after the game, but we didn't do the trip. I've been to all the stadia now because I went to that stadia for the Super Bowl 2 years ago. I've been to Santa Clara because I went to the Super Bowl. We played out there the year Jem was fighting for her life in 15, so I didn't get to go. Your SoFi thing and watching that on TV. I mean, I know you haven't been there. You've flown over the big hole there, and what do you make of the SoFi thing when you see it on TV? Because I've actually been there. It's quite something. And every time I see the NFL Network and I see stuff from there, to have the Ravens actually play there was kind of interesting. I don't know if we're the last team to go in there because everybody goes in there twice, but we were among the last team to get there 4 years into this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any – I'd be lying if I said I had any strong feelings about it. I mean, it's one of the flagship destinations of the NFL now, in the same way that we've thought of, you know, the Cowboys with Jerry down in Arlington and all that. But I mean,
yeah, I think
of
Green Bay is being the flagship, don't you?
No, but I'm talking about modern – I'm talking about modern amenities and excess, what the NFL has become in 2023, that probably epitomizes it at least as well as Jerry's World in Arlington. So, I mean, it's impressive. I mean, you see the scoreboard and all of that. I mean, it seems like an amazing facility, but at the same time, it's still a 100-yard football field, you know, on TV, you know, when you really break it down. Artificial turf, so there's always that, although I haven't heard too many complaints about that playing surface compared to some of the other ones that draw plenty of criticism. But I mean, it's unless you're there in person, you know, I think it's tough to have too much of an opinion of it. But we talked about it when we were in Arlington for the Orioles Rangers, you know, and being outside the Cowboys Stadium. I mean, you see what kind of monstrous building it is, and I would imagine SoFi is the same way. But you know, again, without being there in person, it's tough to really have anything profound to say about it. How about
I didn't expect any vibe, right? And then I, you know, I could hear some Ravens fans certainly when things happen, but there was a lot more noise there than I thought. I watched the Chargers on Red Zone. I come in and out of it. It's always other fans sort of taking over the place. I was sort of shocked that it got a little noisy when Lamar had the ball. Like, that kind of blew me away. Just watching it on television, that would have been different than being there and actually hearing it.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows? Maybe NBC just had the field mics mic'd up in a way that made it sound better than it was. But it did seem like a legitimate crowd. I agree with you. And, I mean, the Chargers, the last couple of years, I mean, even early in the season, I mean, they made the playoffs last year. Let's remember that. I mean, we've talked about this. There's so little juice in LA for them compared to the Rams, the Raiders all these years later. USC football still has more juice, although certainly some disappointment on that front for Trojans fans. But yeah, it's the Chargers. I mean, They're disappointing. They're 4-6 going into the season. They're talented. I mean, they've got some absolutely really premier talent on both sides of the ball, but they're the Chargers. And Brandon Staley's going to get fired at some point here between now and the end of the season, presumably, despite how delusional he was still talking after the game about the AFC being so wide open. It's like, man, you're 4-7. Your defense, Sunday's effort aside, their defense stinks, and they're the Chargers. They turn the ball over at the worst possible times. And we've talked about the Ravens having these excruciating losses the last couple of years. The Chargers, that's a normal thing for them and has been for years. So, but I was definitely surprised on that front. I mean, I think there was a decent number of Ravens fans out there the way it sounded, but it certainly did not, it certainly wasn't a takeover or anything like that. And was some juice. I don't know, maybe people that were visiting family in LA or something like that for Thanksgiving weekend decided they wanted to take in a football game, and maybe that's what it was about.
Well, for me, when I was a kid, and this is all I have to compare it to is my own experience as why I would go to a game or why I wouldn't. My dad and I would always go to pick an Oriole game when, you know, Nolan Ryan was pitching or Tanana was pitching or Splittorff was pitching or, you know, what Fidrich was pitching, you know, like whatever. When Lamar Jackson comes to L.A., there are 14 million people there. Tickets were $18. Like, literally, the Chargers tickets are cheap as hell. You can go anytime you want. And I thought to myself, you know, there might be 10 or 15, 20,000 people that love football in L.A. You may be a Patriot fan and your team stinks. And you're like, well, Lamar Jackson's playing and I live in, you know, wherever, Inglewood, and I'm going to go over to the game. I think the Chargers in L.A., as well as the Rams, are a little bit of this weird novelty, not in a way like when the Ravens come here or when Oklahoma City gets a basketball team or, you know, whenever that Seattle gets a hockey team. And if you're a hockey fan, you become that. But in the modern era, we've seen Jacksonville fail for football. We've seen Florida fail for baseball in two different cities over 30 years. They worked 30 years to get football back there. The Ravens finally make it and play in the new stadium, which, you know, I mean, they're an AFC team, so they could get there a little more often. It feels like we played in San Diego plenty, you know, over the course of time and hadn't been there. The whole L.A. football thing's bizarre to me, but bizarre as to why if I lived there and I was just a regular 35-year-old dude and I wasn't already a Raider fan or I hadn't already declared myself a fan, you wouldn't be a Rams fan and you certainly wouldn't have been a Chargers fan if you grew up in L.A. at all. You're the sort of sworn enemy if you're a Raiders fan. I find the whole thing to be strange. And we don't play there much, play there on Sunday night, play there on a holiday weekend. Our fans went. I mean, I looked on, not a lot, tough trip, tough travel weekend, all of that. But the seats were full. And I'm thinking, that's a Lamar effect. And I thought that when we played out there in 19, we played the Rams at the Memorial Coliseum. Luke, I've been to, I'd say, a million road games. I went to all of them until I got thrown out. But I've been to all of them. And I'd never seen anything like what I saw on the streets of L.A. that night, which was Lamar Jackson swag being sold everywhere. So I do think there's a point where when he plays at SoFi Stadium 3,000 miles away, I think there was a novelty about seeing Lamar play. And I believe that he's become that. He's become a little bit of a must-see thing. I don't know, in Jacksonville in a couple of weeks from now, people actually go for that sort of thing. But I think in L.A., there were people there to see Lamar play.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's probably the best explanation you could come up with other than, you know, what we had talked about just a couple minutes ago. So, but it didn't feel like, and look, I mean, let's face it, this wasn't a great Ravens offensive performance by any stretch of the imagination. It was quite choppy, and at times it was not very good and questionable decisions. Lamar, didn't think Lamar played a poor game, but he definitely was pressured, and he was not very good when he was under pressure, which at times this year he's been excellent even when he's been under pressure. So the Chargers defense and the pass rush really got to him, and more so got to the offensive line. So it wasn't as though Lamar had these extensive opportunities to make something spectacular happen. I mean, we saw the sidearm, you know, the sidearm throw, as you could see on the NBC broadcast with the replay, and he had a couple impressive scrambles, but he didn't have that signature big time play where you just go, oh my goodness, that was unbelievable. I mean, you know, he ran 11 times, scrambled 11 times, 39 yards, or I guess design runs mixed in there too. So longest rush was 8. So he didn't have that unbelievable wow moment. You know, like I said, sidearm throw. Okay. I mean, it was a good throw, but we've seen Lamar do that before. So, yeah, I think that's probably the biggest reason why. And it's LA. I mean, what? The only thing that Los Angeles really, truly cares about from a sports standpoint is LeBron and the Lakers. And even then, they can be fickle. So, I mean, Lamar comes to town. And, you know, this was talked about when they were in London back in October. You know, he's been that guy, and he's been that guy for a few years now, going back to his MVP season. He's such a unique talent that if you haven't seen him play, and he's playing in a market where he's not coming every year like Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Cincinnati, I mean, yeah, you're going to get a little extra traction there. Even for the Chargers, who no one cares about in Los Angeles at this point.
Well, I was shocked that there was as much baby blue as there was. I guess that was my point in all of it, is saying, well, they're trying to build something out there, but I thought the whole idea, and I talked about it last week, the whole idea is poppycock. I don't know. I mean, that franchise is going to wind up in Europe. I think that's obvious. And for, you know, any of my broken souls who were San Diego Chargers fans, which is half my family, my cousins, my aunt, my uncle, everybody out in San Diego, I always feel sort of it's the big empty. And for the Ravens to actually go out there and play for the first time, it's been a little while. Let's talk about Lamar. Let's talk about the offense. Let's talk about running the ball. They ran the ball. I mean, like, and it's what they probably should be doing, right? I mean, at the end of the day, Lamar ran a little bit at the end. But this three-pronged attack that they're trying to, a little bit of Keaton, a little bit of Justice Hill, Gus when you need him, Gus, you know, when you really need him in the fourth quarter, being there. The offensive line, to me, is still, I don't say suspect, because I see Linderbaum out there blowing people up like a first-round draft pick and makes me say Hollywood who. But I think the tackles and protection for him and no Mark Andrews, just still trying to figure it out. And Beckham, it feels really choppy with Beckham. It feels like he's healthy enough to be a part of it. He's out there running these slants. And Zay Flowers in the running game, which is an interesting – they've tried that with Duvernay for about 5 years now, and they get Zay Flowers loose in a run. They're still tinkering. And I guess that's probably to the detriment of the other defensive coordinator, because they're still showing stuff 12, 13 weeks into this that – Monken and Lamar have you on your toes, because that Lamar Zay handoff that iced the game, that's going to F up almost anybody when you got two guys with 4-1 speed and one could go east and one can go west, and you got to figure out if you're a linebacker which side you're going to move your hips on, and then he finds a hole and you can't catch him.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll even throw Keaton Mitchell in there, because Keaton Mitchell's speed is right there, if not better than those guys, quite frankly, if you look at some of the next-gen stats and player tracking and whatnot. But, I mean, it remains a work in progress. I think you look at how they played Sunday night. You know, they didn't really run the ball that well in the first half. If you go back and look at the halftime numbers, it wasn't great. I think Lamar was their leading rusher at halftime, and, you know, they finally did get the running game ramped up a little bit more in the second half. I mean, but Gus Edwards didn't find a whole lot of room. I think for me, it's becoming evident at this point in time that I don't think Keaton Mitchell is going to become the main guy in the way that they would have envisioned for J.K. Dobbins had he not gotten hurt in the opener. But I do see, assuming he holds onto the ball, assuming he continues to grow in terms of responsibility and being a complete player at the position, it's feeling like this is Keaton Mitchell's job to become a little more prominent and Gus Edwards to become a little more complimentary. If they're really going to try to reach their ceiling as far as what their offense is going to be. But that's what I kind of foresee for the running game. And I know Justice Hill, you know, he busted one run for 18 yards, but, you know, thought it was some weird usage of the running backs from Todd Monken. You know, I thought that short yardage situation where Justice Hill ran the ball. I mean, you know, the fourth and one called a direct snap to Gus Edwards. I mean, what is that? I mean, that was way too cute. So, you know, I think it was a rough night for Todd Monken, if I'm being totally honest with you. I think he did a good job getting the ball to wide receivers and to Isaiah Likely in space early in the game, and they had some success with that. And it's not as though they didn't move the ball at all. I mean, they had one three and out, but they really, you know, they moved the ball, but and it wasn't even that they got to the red zone and bogged down. They kind of bogged down, you know, in that, you know, getting close to field goal range kind of area, and you know, just it was very choppy. You know,
they didn't touch the ball
game
for a long time. Then they got the three and out, right? I mean, they had the 19 play drive that was nothing, right? With the Chargers, I mean, there was a long time where they were iced off the ball late in the game.
Well, that's I mean, the long 19 play drive that the Chargers had, where I mean, obviously Clowney gets the strip sack. I mean, it was just a monstrous play by the defense. But yeah, I mean, it was a weird night for the offense because again, they did some good things. I mean, I liked what they were able to do to get the ball to some of the receivers in open space. And to your point, Beckham didn't play a whole lot, and I think the shoulder was a factor. But you know, I pointed this out last week in the aftermath of the Cincinnati game. Beckham was coming off of his two best games, and those were always also his two lowest snap counts. So maybe the idea for Odell Beckham is you got to keep him on a pitch count, and that makes him more explosive, and that's going to keep him as healthy as possible. So, but they're, I think it's evident, and the fact that they were 4 of 13 on third down, they missed Mark Andrews. And that's not a knock on Isaiah Likely, who had a solid football game, but he's not the same exact player. He even admitted as much himself, you know, whereas Andrews is that guy that when Lamar goes off script, you know, he can just throw the ball up, right? As, how many times has it been a case where Lamar throws it into traffic and you say, oh, no, 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 and then Mark Andrews makes an unbelievable catch? They're not going to have that right now. At least right now, they're not going to have that. But because who's emerging to be that? Likely is, to me, more of a guy that get the ball to him on a tight end screen, get the ball to him in space, and allow him to break some tackles. And we saw that last year. I mean, he's tough to bring down. You know, one guy usually can't do it. And, you know, that's a little bit different. Not that Mark Andrews can't create after the catch, you know, that doesn't break some tackles here and there, but you think of him as more of the guy that, you know, finds a window and sits and Lamar delivers it to him, or he makes the contested catch. So it's a different kind of player. So it's not as though they're completely doomed at the tight end position, but you're going from having a top two or top three tight end in football to wherever Isaiah Likely ranks. So that means you do need four or five different guys to pick it up. So, and to your point, you know, it was nice to see Zay Flowers have the game he did. And they're going to need more of that. You know, they're going to need, you know, look at the great catch that Bateman had on the third down on the touchdown drive in the first half. I mean,
yeah,
that was
I wanted
a terrific
to talk
catch.
About him.
They're going to need more.
Yeah, he's a one, and he's a guy with all of this potential that we haven't really scratched the surface of. When he's been healthy, it's very clear why they picked him, why he was a first round draft pick. But over the body of work, I mean, especially now that Andrews, you know, it's going to be 6, 8, 10 targets a game that he's not going to be there. Yeah, I'd like to see Bateman catch 3 or 4 balls a game, right? I'd like to see him be involved in some first downs. I'd like to see him be what the promise of drafting him in the first round was. I mean, we're starting to get the report card out on him at this point.
Well, I mean, so much of it's just been that he's missed so much time with injuries. I mean, even this past week, it was a legitimate injury scare. He went down. It was Wednesday during the viewing portion of practice. I mean, he ran a route and he went to the ground and then was holding his surgically repaired left foot to the point where you're saying, oh my goodness, did he just, you know, whatever a setback would be with the Liz Frank injury or Liz Frank surgery, you were wondering if that's what it was. But, you know, he assured everyone he was fine. He was a full go the rest of the week and he played and, you know, didn't look any worse for wear. But I think this is part of what's so tricky for the Ravens, for Lamar Jackson now without Mark Andrews. And I get it. He missed a couple games last year and likely stepped in and did a good job. But when you're talking about a long-term absence, and we'll see if they make it to the AFC Championship, maybe he can come back. If they make it to the Super Bowl, maybe he comes back. But we know he's going to be out for the foreseeable future, if not the rest of the year. Think about how the Ravens offense has operated going all the way back to Lamar's MVP season until the present day. Lamar has typically been a passer who is focused in on two guys more often than not, Mark Andrews and whoever the best wide receiver has been. So, you know, that was Mark Andrews and Marquise Brown. This year, it had been Mark Andrews and Zay Flowers. Andrews goes down against Cincinnati. Lamar spread the ball around really well, and that was a credit to him. That was a testament to all those guys for stepping up in game when you lose Andrews on the opening drive the way they did. But in the big picture sense, that's where the question now lies as far as how is this passing game going to look when Lamar doesn't have, I mean, Lamar called, said it himself. Andrews and him are peanut butter and jelly, you know, bread and butter, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's how innate their chemistry is, almost instinctive, you know, because they came in together. And I mean, it's unspoken between those two. So you don't have that. So you have to be better on script with your passing game. And that's going to require multiple guys to step up, because you can't just expect Likely just to become Mark Andrews. That'd be unfair to him. I mean, he's a second year former, you know, fourth round pick. I mean, he's got talent, but he's not Mark Andrews. So you need collectively guys to step up. So it's got to be more, a little more from Zay Flowers. Got to be Likely, certainly. Beckham, who's looked way better the last three or four games compared to how he looked early in the year, but you got to keep him healthy and fresh and explosive. And you're going to need more plays from Rashad Bateman or Nelson Aguilar, who at times has looked really good, but other times has kind of just disappeared from this offense almost entirely. So it really is going to be a collective effort. And yes, I agree with you that they need to run the ball consistently. And, you know, they've done a much better job of that as the year's gone on, but you know, this is something you have to figure out. And I think discouraging is not the right word, because, I mean, heck, they won the football game. But I think what's a little, you know, creates some urgency to really get in the lab during the bye week, if you're Todd Monken and the coaching staff, it's the fact that you did have this extra rest and you did have some extra time to prepare. And that is not a good Chargers defense. And that was a Chargers defense without Joey Bosa, mind you. You know, that was not a great offensive performance by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, they've got to figure some things out. And to your point, I'd be remiss if I didn't agree with you on this. You know, the pass protection needs to be better. And I get it. Khalil Mack is a Hall of Fame caliber pass rusher, right? I mean, he's been that guy for a long time. But, you know, collectively, I mean, Lamar, you know, he was under a lot of duress in that game. And, I mean, he was able to create and extend some plays and do some, you know, scramble here and there and extend a couple plays here and there and complete passes down the field. But by and large, it was very choppy. So they need their offense to be better. You know, I think Monken struggled to have a good feel for how to call that game as it went on, but they did get the running game going in the second half. And to their credit, even though the defense did the heaviest lifting by far, they did finish and they did get that play with Zay Flowers, and that was intriguing to see. And I agree with you. I'd much rather see him running plays like that than Devin Duvernay, who we saw in the first half, where to me that kind of, you know, they had a great opportunity late in the first half and they ran Duvernay on a first down for no gain. And I think that kind of put that drive going in a wrong direction. So they've got some playmakers. I mean, Harbaugh said it this past week, and I agree with him. I didn't think it was coach speak whatsoever. He said that they are better equipped now to endure the loss of Mark Andrews than they were last year or the year before or the year before that. And I think that's absolutely true. They have more skill players and more depth as far as pass catchers to endure that, but doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And I think we saw that Sunday night with some of the issues they had specifically on third down.
One thing I'll say on Lamar, specifically Lamar, is just his play aside and whatever accuracy he's going to, sometimes he's going to throw darts. Sometimes it's going to sail like every other quarterback. Sometimes it's going to be good decisions. Sometimes he's going to get away. And he did that two or three times where he looked trapped and got away when the pocket collapses on him a little bit. I would say this, he's taking better care of himself when he's out in space. He's not running into linebackers like he was 5 years ago that you and I have talked about. We've talked about him being on the field and healthy in December and being able to do all the things he wants to do with all these gimp quarterbacks, injured quarterbacks. I mean, you see Herbert with the left hand all wrapped up. You see Bosa up there sitting eating Raisin Bran. You see Mark Andrews out. You see Marlon Humphrey out. You see Ronnie Stanley, a shell of what he could and should be. Lamar being Lamar, Lamar being healthy and Lamar being upright in December during the bye, that unto itself at 9-3, wherever they're going to be as a one seed, a two seed, however many more games they're going to drop, having him healthy is that's the whole game. I mean, Cleveland doesn't have that. Cincinnati doesn't have that. We can go through Minnesota. We can go through all these teams that don't have their quarterback. The Ravens were that team. So he could be 9-3 all day, but if Lamar gets his leg broken next week against LA, it's over. Keeping him healthy and having him make good decisions,
to not get blown up every week, once or twice, and to say, oh my God, don't get hit like that. You're going to get hurt. I do feel like where we are the last couple of weeks watching him play Cincinnati, Cleveland, he's taking better care. He's making business decisions for the team instead of himself maybe last year to stay healthy. And I do like that he's not getting crushed or putting himself in a position to get himself crushed. He's getting down. He's ducking. He's sliding. He's looking for space and getting down, as opposed to, I got one more guy to beat and I'm going to make SportsCenter. Because I think he thought more like that 5 years ago.
I think he did 5 years ago. I think you exaggerate how many big hits he's taken over the last few years. I'll continue to say that. We'll agree to disagree on that, but you said it. I mean, and look, it's same. This really isn't anything that's unique to Lamar. I mean, Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles. He's not a mobile quarterback. Joe Burrow messed up his wrist, getting sacked in the pocket. I mean, Lamar, the last 2 years, again, got hurt as a passer. I mean, it really is just about the health of your quarterback. And you knock on wood, you say a prayer, cross your fingers, cross your toes, you know, whatever it you do, you know, four-leaf clover, whatever, you need to keep him on the field. There's no doubt. And, I mean, I think I agree with you to a point, but I mean, he got his ankle messed up in the Cincinnati game. I mean, it's football and he's going to run. I mean, that's part of what makes Lamar Lamar. I wouldn't want Lamar to stop running. He wouldn't be as special of a quarterback then.
I think he's running differently
entirely.
Though. You would agree with that, right?
I don't really know if I do agree with that. I don't think he's run that much differently. 2018, yes. I don't agree with you that he took all these massive, was getting walloped every week. He just wasn't.
I don't think he avoided the contact as well as he's been avoiding it lately. I'm not looking to criticize him. I'm actually looking to praise him and saying,
no,
he's upright.
I just haven't seen
the
same
game
a little
differently. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't even think it's so much him. They're not using as many design runs for him. I mean, when he's taking off, it's much more him scrambling as a passer. So I don't even know if it's so much Lamar playing differently as much as the Ravens offense and Todd Monken calling games differently. So, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be disagreeable here. I just don't think it's a dramatic difference as far as when he does take off. I think he's, you know, for a few years now has, for the most part, and you know, he still takes a big hit on occasion, but I don't think it's this. In comparison, take a look at the hits that Anthony Richardson for the Colts was taking early this year, and you kind of see why he was out for the year. I mean, he was getting crushed multiple times.
Dude, I saw Josh Allen get taken down in a chicken wing and didn't even get a call. You know, I'm not seeing Lamar getting his jersey ripped off. I'm not seeing him getting his head ripped off. I think there's even a point where some of the defenders don't want to hurt him, just shove him out of bounds, get rid of him. That he has.
Yeah.
He's thinking about it differently. And to your point, and I will fight with you about this because it was 2 years ago this week that I got thrown out that he ran the ball 21 times. And many of those were absolute designed runs. They're not designing runs for him. And when they do, the design is I'm going to run 6 yards and fall down and we're going to be in second and four. Not I'm going to run 6 yards, try to play my game and deke and get walloped and we're in second and two and I got walloped. I'd rather be in second and four and live another day. I guess I see it that way watching it. Maybe it's on television. I don't know that it does feel like when he gets into space with the ball, whether it's trying to find a receiver or, hey, I'm going to run it or, hey, it's a busted play. But I mean, I've seen him now like trying to throw the ball away in these weird ways when he's getting sacked because he's not used to getting sacked. That's a little, I see more of the quarterbacks in the league doing that, like doing that irresponsible, like throw the ball. Maybe I'll get a penalty. Maybe there'll be a receiver. I've just seen more of that across the league this year. Maybe young quarterbacks under duress than just turtling up the way maybe Peyton Manning did at the end of his career. Just turtle up. I'm not going to get hit. I like the way Lamar's taking care of Lamar, I guess, to my point, and that he's not running the ball 21 times, and they're not designing runs 6, 8, 10 times a game. And when the sphincters got tight in the game on Sunday night, it wasn't Lamar left, Lamar right. He was still
Lamar's going to drop back and pass, and or we're going to have Zay Flowers run, or we're going to have Keaton Mitchell run. I just that would I wasn't down on Roman when Roman was here. I didn't beat him up nearly as much as you and a lot of other people did, but he ran Lamar the way Matt Wieters was catching for Buck Showalter for me, and I like that Lamar comes into these press conferences not looking disheveled, not looking beaten up. Cincinnati ankle thing aside, and that can happen anytime. But I do feel like they're taking care of their $250 million piece of property, and that's important because I didn't feel that way 3-4 years ago. I thought that they were dealing with the devil, and I don't feel like they're playing the game that way anymore.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And look, I already said, to me, the bigger difference is schematics and play calling than how Lamar's running when he's running. You know what I mean? Like I don't. Because again, I'll continue to fight you on this idea that he got walloped 8 times a game running the ball. I mean, it was always uncanny that he avoided taking a ton of hits, considering how much he ran the ball. And to me, that was a credit to him. But there's no question that they have tried to move away from that. Lamar's talked about this for years as someone who prefers passing to running. I absolutely believe that. I think Lamar is sincere in that. Now, instinct takes over at some point when you're the competitor out there, in the same way that it does for Josh Allen, in the same way that it does for Jalen Hurts. When you're a quarterback that's mobile and has the ability to run and you're not seeing anyone open downfield, you're only going to sit in the pocket so long, and then you're just going to say, forget it. I gotta take off. So, you know, when Lamar does that, he's still one of the absolute most dangerous players in the NFL. There's no question about that. But yeah, they're not leaning as heavily into the design runs. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So I don't think we disagree nearly as much as it may have come across here. So, but it's different. But all that said, it takes one play. I mean, saw it with Mark Andrews. You know, Mark Andrews is a guy that hadn't missed a whole lot of time in his career. Guys are durable or avoid injury until they don't anymore. And it's not even that guys are, quote, injury prone all the time. Sometimes it's just, it's football. You get hurt. So that's the key for the Ravens. And that's the difference of the Ravens right now compared to the Bengals, compared to the Browns with Deshaun Watson, and, you know, go down the list of other quarterbacks in the AFC and NFC that are missing time right now. I mean, it's all about keeping your guy upright. If you do, you got a great chance to win. If you don't, you're probably done. I mean, that's just how it is. That's why, you know, all this talk the last couple of years about the Ravens not being as good with Lamar. Well, no duh. Same thing would be true if Patrick Mahomes went down or any other team. I mean, the Bengals are totally done now without Joe Burrow. That's how it works. So he's healthy. You knock on wood. You hope that it stays that way. And you hope you can stay relatively healthy the rest of the way as a football team, because if they do, boy, this is a team that has a great opportunity to make a deep playoff run, deeper than they've been in a long time.
Nice, easy week ahead as the Orioles stalk Blake Snell with $200 million. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour all week long. On Wednesday, we're going to be at Coco's, hence the shirt, established in 1985. I'm going to be there in 2023. Looking forward to the famous Coco's Crab Cake, as well as a burger and some fries. Mike Versigliano is going to be joining us along with Ron Cassie and others on Wednesday. Thursday, we move the show over to the BMA. We're going to be at Gertrude's over off the Hopkins campus. We're going to be giving away even scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Window Nation, 86690Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare, putting on all of these things. Dan Roderick's on a Thursday, as well as Councilwoman Odette Ramos. And then on Friday, we're heading up to Perryville, Cecil County. We're going to be at Hollywood Casino right there in the sports bar. I'm going to visit with Amy and Jonathan and our friends Christian up there at Hollywood Casino, and also going to have Maryland Stadium Authority Chairman, former Chairman Tom Kelso, joining us to discuss money, football, baseball, the city, the stadia, live, work, play, all of those things. That's going to happen on Friday. We're going to be at State Fair next week on Tuesday for breakfast on the 5th. We're going to be at Curio and Foreign Daughter on the 15th. Gina Schock from the Go-Go's Hall of Famer is going to be joining us later on in the month for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Hey, it wouldn't be the holidays if I don't go home to Dundalk at least once. I got down there to Costas. I'll be getting back again to Drug City as well. He is Luke. I am Nestor. He doesn't have the week off. He's going to be writing and doing stuff, but the Ravens have some bye time this week. We all have a little bit of downtime this week. We can maybe focus on the Orioles offseason a little bit, watch some football here, and maybe get some pre-holiday tasks done that have nothing to do with Cyber Monday. order some crab cakes online. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. 9-3 and a bye week for the Ravens and Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.